This is the manual. So when you come in here, wipe your Tim's at the door, hang your hat, hang your New Era 5950 on a hook, and don't take yourselves too seriously, or us either, please.
Right.
I had a whole slew of jokes in my brain going around about this first topic.
Okay.
And then I didn't write them down. I just thought to myself, like, I'm going to just hang on to these and run with them.
Yeah, because they're good.
Yeah. But then I lost most of them. So let's see what happens here, right? Are you familiar with normcore?
Kind of, sort of, yes.
All right. So give me what your understanding of normcore is in 12 seconds.
So normcore, as far as I understand it, is like people ironically acting like middle-class white people in the way they dress and the way they behave, like middle-class suburban white people specifically.
Yeah.
Like everybody's got on khakis and a sweater and a button-down shirt with the collar out, and everybody's acting this sort of prim and proper, almost like 60s kind of vibe.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But now, and they're doing it ironically, but then, of course, just like anything else people do ironically, they get absorbed into it so much that it just becomes them.
It becomes a scene. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a fashion scene, normcore, right?
Yeah.
And normcore is, it's to blame for something.
I'm sure.
Now, what it is to blame,
that's up for debate.
We got to work through that. That's what that's what we're here to work through.
Right.
Now, my view of normcore is that this is a bunch of dorks who decided that they were going to make mediocrity something more than it is.
All right. I see that.
Right. It's like, hey, I got nothing going on.
Right.
Well, hold on. Let me rewind. I think I respect it, actually. Now, I think I respect the hell out of normcore.
14 seconds in?
Yeah, no. I thought I hated it.
Right.
But it just clicked in my head that I think I really have a, you know, like I put them on a, I put normcore folks, normcoremans.
Right.
Normcoremen on a pedestal because they didn't have anything. They had absolutely nothing. They didn't have charisma.
Right.
They didn't have money to buy flashy clothes.
Sure.
They didn't have talent to get themselves known for the fact that maybe they were like a phenomenal skateboarder or they drew beautiful art. They had absolutely nothing.
Right. They came empty-handed.
But they took that nothing and made themselves something to stand out by having absolutely nothing. They said, you know what? We're not even going to try and stand out. We're going to make fitting in
stand out.
Stand out.
We're going to celebrate that we have nothing to celebrate.
We're going to take fitting in and turn it into a scene.
Right.
We're going to take normality,
right,
mediocrity, and we're going to create a whole scene around mediocrity.
Right. We're going to take we don't ever want to stand out and make it something that stands out.
Which is, I mean, that's a hell of a situation.
It is. That's a solid move.
If you ask some of my right-winged friends, I'm sure they're pretty angry about the, because this is the idea of like what goes on with words in general, right?
Okay.
We take words and we assign them these meanings that people get angry about and some people don't get angry about. And normcore did that with a whole lifestyle, dude.
Yeah.
They took pronouns and turned it into a whole fashion sense lifestyle.
Right.
I respect the hell out of normcore. I thought I was going to come in
here. This went sideways on you, didn't
it? Yeah, I didn't know that that's what was going to happen here. I thought I was going to come in here and start shitting on normcore and say they're just a bunch of dorks who had nothing going on and they tried to make something. But then I realized they made something out of nothing.
So I think that that's a beautiful moment here on the show that kind of like encapsulates the whole idea of the show, which is you came in ready to be angry and ready to rail against this. But then you thought about it for a few minutes and you changed your perspective.
Listen, I'm a guy who is very willing to switch my position.
Right.
I'm showing you down the center, Dad. I hold no alliances to anything.
Right.
Except
the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, the truth and thorough white dudes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The truth?
Fair enough. The only guy who's more the truth than a TWD like me is obviously Beanie Siegel.
And RJ Truth from the WWE.
I'm unfamiliar.
I mean, it's in his name.
I mean, I'm unfamiliar, but I'll give you that, since you don't have anybody else to talk wrestling with. Since you can't hijack the podcast and then talk wrestling.
That never happened. I don't know what he's talking about.
I'll let you get that.
Thorough White Dude's never been hijacked.
So, listen.
Yeah.
We were talking heavy bike talk last week.
Yeah, it's a big bike talk. I'm surprised you're here with all four limbs in check, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I went riding yesterday. So my cousin texts me, are you familiar with Dirt Bike Rel?
I don't think so.
All right, so Dirt Bike Rel is like a big name in Philly bike life scene.
Any relation to Hell Rel?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Second cousins.
All right.
Victor, what's the deal, kid? So Dirt Bike Rel was like maybe, I guess, depending on who you ask, and I'm not super familiar, but he may be like coveted as the all-time greatest dirt bike rider in the city of Philadelphia.
Okay.
Right? And I've seen footage of Dirt Bike Rel whipping a Yamaha 450 like it was a 125. He's like on one wheel, swinging it side to side and in the middle of the night and swerving cars and hopping on the sidewalk, wheeling down the sidewalk for a block, then hopping it off and just keeping it all on one wheel. He was pretty amazing.
So you can't verify that he's the best, but you can certainly see why he'd be in the running.
Yeah, absolutely. Gotcha. Without a doubt. And Dirt Bike Rel is no longer with us.
R.I.P.
So I don't know how he died. I'm
biking accident?
I really don't know. I think he was probably had a foot in the streets. I think a lot of the dirt bike boys out in the city got a foot in the streets. It's like, because it's modern day cowboys.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like when I'm on my steel horse, bro, I feel like a modern day cowboy. As a matter of fact, let me get back to Dirt Bike Rel. I found some guys that got you. That was it.
Of the 8 billion different things I expect the show to do, quote Bon Jovi is not
got
one
you.
Of them.
Yeah, that you already know to expect the unexpected. Pei, we've been doing this for 2 years now.
So good for you. You could still catch me off guard.
And you know that Stevie Franks once said it best when he said, "I never know what you're going to be into."
Right.
And that's what I like, dude. I don't want you to know where I'm coming from.
No, I'm not mad at it. It just caught me.
Good. That's what I'm trying to do. First, I found some guys online called the Dirty Civilians.
Okay.
Now, these guys might be a little bit too far into the QAnon message boards.
Okay.
But I also respect what they got going on. They turned their bikes into survival machines. Now, like the one, like, all right, so he went full bore and painted it digital camo. A little too much, Bo. Although I am thinking about painting my bike olive drab green. So I don't. Maybe it's not too much. I don't know.
In case you got to run from the cops in the woods again.
But he's got packs on the back. He's like ready to go. Like, should an emergency happen, this guy could hop on his 250 and ride off into the sunset and survive, right?
His whole bike is just his bunk out bag.
Right. And in the back of my mind, that's what I have a dirt bike for. If it all goes to hell, yeah, I'm going to be out there renegade on a dirt bike.
Yeah, throw the whole family on the back and take off.
No. I'm going to make sure that they're tucked away somewhere safely.
Okay.
And then I'm out there on my pony.
They're in the secret shelter, and then you're going to get off there and take care of business.
I'm going to go get food. I'm going to, you know, see what we could do. Maybe find an escape route.
Sure.
And really, if it really, really goes down, I think a dirt bike may be your best vehicle.
I think depending on what's happening.
If you don't have access to a helicopter, the next best may be a dirt bike.
I think it's the other way around, potentially, because I don't think you can get as far with a helicopter because of the fuel consumption that you can on a dirt bike.
That's true.
So I think the dirt bike certainly has its pluses. You know, the
helicopter probably need special fuel for a helicopter too.
I don't know if they run on anything particular, but I know they have small tanks and can't get very far. So as long as you're cool just being like 40 minutes away, fine. But with the dirt bike, you can probably put some decent amount of miles behind the incident, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I get about 100 miles to my tank.
Okay.
And my tank cost about $5 to fill.
And is that 100 miles just kicking the throttle all the way the whole time?
Probably not.
Okay.
But I don't do that. I'm not ready to. I haven't got it up past 55 yet.
You're not ruling it out. You're just not ready yet.
I've got it over 50 a couple times, but less than a handful.
Gotcha.
So, anyway, back to dirt. So, my cousin, this is all nonsense. But I'm just trying to make a conversation out of nonsense and entertain the people with my nonsense.
That's what you do.
That's what the show's about.
That's right.
Maybe you put this on in your shop. Maybe you put it on at your job site. I don't know.
Maybe you start your own bike shop that turns bikes into survival machines.
Listen, don't think that I haven't already. I was doing some bike mechanic stuff over the weekend. Don't think I didn't say to myself, I could be a dirt bike mechanic.
There's that one company out in Arizona that makes a fortune doing it. I'm trying to think what their name is. I'll look for it while you're...
And they turn them into like...
Well, like, they're not bikes, but you send them like your Ford Econoline van and they send it back with giant knobby tires and it's bulletproof and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah, no, not a bad idea, dude. I could be just in the shed out back putting... Because I'm thinking about maybe crafting some kind of sheath for a machete on the side of my bike.
Okay.
So that as I'm riding, I could just reach in and I look like Sir Lancelot at a joust. Just pulling out my machete and, you know.
Just ready to take heads.
Like, do you think I'm going to get pulled over if I have a machete sheathed on the side of my bike? What's the chances of that?
I think if it's blatantly out, like, I think if your sheath covers it all the way up to the handle, I don't think they'll mess with you probably, but I think if any bit of metal of the blade itself is showing, I think you're going to get pulled over.
All right.
I think they might chalk it up to decoration otherwise.
Maybe I need to figure out a way to tuck it inside of the plastics.
Okay.
That way they won't see it.
Or maybe the blade is thin enough that it, like, slides along the body so that when it's tucked in, you know, you really can't see it, and then just make the handle the color of the body.
Yeah, okay. I'm open to it. I'm working on it.
I think they're called Quigley, that company.
Gotcha. I'm working on it. So my cousin, who I'm trying... Now I'm trying... I want everybody to be on a bike now.
Right.
Now that I've been riding for a week,
yeah,
I want everybody else to be riding.
Right.
Because this has taken my life by storm.
Yeah.
So my cousin, who I'm trying to get him to get a bike, he's kind of like half surgeon. One day he just texted me out of nowhere, just the words, dirt bike rel.
Okay.
And I'm like, yeah, I know about dirt bike rail. As a matter of fact, they call me dirt white rail.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember that.
So yesterday was dirt white rail's birthday ride out. We were out there with the boys.
Beautiful.
And it was me and Screw and two other guys who were putting me and Screw to shame because they have 450s.
Was it the guy who fixed Screw's bike last week?
No. Okay. No, not those guys. I was out with him late night on Saturday night.
Gotcha.
I met him at Woody's for a drink. So we were going hard on talking bike talk, right? Yeah. And I said, I'm trying to find a brand that I could be loyal to,
right,
in the bike gear genre.
Yeah, bike fashion, because you don't want to be paying $900,000 for whatever Ralph is offering you in the bike life scene.
And I just didn't think that Ralph had it. I'm like, Ralph, you know, he probably got a couple of leather jackets.
Right. But so that was fashion than safety.
Right. So that was Monday night. Tuesday, I get a text from the Polo app that says, check out our new spring collection.
Okay.
Now, you know me, bro. I'm going to check out the spring collection.
You're already checking out the summer collection as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I'm going to check out what the spring collection's about.
Right.
So I open it up. You will never believe, I think you probably already know, but the entire spring collection is all BMX and dirt bike gear.
Isn't that weird?
It's crazy. Now, we know that me and Ralph function on the same wavelength.
Yeah, of course.
But this shows just how deep in my psyche that Ralph has embedded himself.
You're interwoven.
That not only did he have dirt bike pants, that I was looking for a new pair of dirt bike pants this Tuesday, that day.
Yeah.
But he also said, hey, just in case you don't want to go full out dirt bike with me, I got your old hobbies in the bag, too. We got some BMX pants for you.
Yeah.
And a couple of race jerseys. That's kind of crazy. For a long time, there's been this conversation or the idea of, like, white people taking black music and pilfering it, maybe ruining it, maybe not, maybe, you know.
The appropriation and or culture vulture sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. We had Elvis back in the day.
Right.
Elvis blew up off of what, you know, who did Elvis steal it from, would you say?
Elvis mostly was, if you want to call it stealing, I don't think that's a reason.
Who was Elvis influenced by?
Gospel music. Tons and tons of gospel music. And you can hear it in all of his early albums. He's just flat out singing gospel choir music.
I thought they were saying like he got it from like Little Richard or something like that.
I think he's before Little Richard, but I'm sure there's somebody that they can point to. But overall, it's just they feel that it's just the theft of gospel music in general.
So, but Elvis is great. So if he took gospel, and obviously he's loved by millions of people, so you can't knock the man's talent and skill level. He was able to take it and make it popular to the masses.
Right.
Eminem did the same thing.
Right.
Right? And you could hate on him, but you can't deny, if you know anything about the craft of emceeing, it's hard to deny Eminem's skill set in that fashion. I don't listen to too much Eminem past his first or second album.
Sure.
But I will never deny his skill set.
He's one of those, more than likely, he's your favorite MC's favorite MC.
Right. Well, he's not journalist.
But he might be journalist's favorite MC.
He's, I doubt it. Journalist is in a league of his own.
Well, journalist.
It's journalist and Black Thought. I saw the comment, and that's it, dude. Journalist
you're
and Black Thought. It's the perfect, you know what I mean? It's the perfect pair there.
But yeah, so there is always, especially because a lot of, especially when we're dealing with music, a lot of the black art forms that we're talking about come from sort of a place of poverty and oppression.
Right.
There's a very stern eye turned towards any white person that tries to do it because it feels like you can't understand this, so why are you trying to participate?
Yeah, and I fully disagree with that.
I think it's a situational thing. I think Elvis and Eminem specifically, like, I disagree because they came from this upbringing that you know, rappers and or gospel people.
Right.
That's the same upbringing. It does not matter what he was. He went through a lot of these trials and tribulations as well.
Right. And I fully disagree with it. However, there is Europeans are ruining parts of hip hop culture.
It's gone too far.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Okay.
Right. To me, I don't think hip hop has any place on any other side of the pond. I almost understand what black people are feeling when white guys do hip hop, because I feel that way about Europeans trying to take our culture. I feel like hip hop culture is American culture. Now, obviously, we're the greatest country out here, and everybody's trying to be what we are.
It's right, you know, on our mean? Money.
They
yeah.
love our. The world loves American culture.
Sure.
Hip hop being at the forefront of American culture, it's makes sense as to how it makes its way to Europe and to Asia and, you know, all over the world at this point. But some things just go a little bit too far.
Okay.
We uncovered a video that proves Europeans are ruining aspects of hip-hop culture.
Of the elements. Yeah.
We don't talk about the elements enough. Don't talk about the elements enough anymore.
Right.
Here at The Manual, you will get elements talk.
Yeah.
Because we are grounded in the four elements.
We're elemental.
Elemental. Play the video, Pei.
Will do.
I stumbled across this. I don't know why. I'm not a... Now, it starts off, you're like, okay. Because it's a good... It's like, all right, you got the skill set. He's
right.
They're going back and forth. It's a little beatbox battle. Two European guys, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, these guys are on it. They got they're a little more dubstep than.
Yeah, I'm hearing that with the robot gurgles and stuff.
But it's still cool.
Okay. Yeah. Round one,
fights. And then this happens. Now it turns into the Beat It video. This is the Jets versus the Sharks and the Jets via beatbox battle, cuz. That is so fruity. Let's stand across from each other and make noises with our mouths and make it now boy band. Finish it off boy band pose. You seen that? You caught the boy band pose at the end. It's ridiculous, dude.
That was the whole, it looped around, right?
Yeah, that was it, dude. That was it.
So obviously all of it's a problem. But my biggest issue with
it didn't start out as a problem.
Well,
I was okay with the first 30 seconds of this.
So, but hear me out, though. So, in retrospect, the whole thing's a problem Because if you're going to do a battle, do a battle. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But they clearly got together and choreographed this whole thing.
Yeah.
So which means they knew what the other ones were going to do. So now it's not even a battle. Now it's just a performance, which fine. So then tell me I'm coming to see some kind of beatbox performance art. This is, I don't know what that was, but it should not have happened.
It might as well, they might as well be doing this in the building next to wherever Hamilton is on Broadway. Because it's ridiculous, bro.
They're openers for Avenue Q.
And then when that, yeah, my, bro, it's like, it looks like West Side Story in Germany. Yeah. This is the German version of modern day West Side Story.
East Berlin, West Berlin.
Yeah. And then they give you a boy band pose at the end just to top off how dumb it all is.
Yeah.
I'm done with them, dude. As far as I'm concerned, Europe has lost their privileges. For hip-hop element battles.
That's it.
That means no breakdance battles, right. No graph battles, no beatbox battles, no DJ battles.
So, okay.
And definitely, we don't want to hear you Europeans rap, so don't even come to with the BS
well, then
MC
I,
battles.
So I'm with you, but now I have two questions for you.
Please do.
What do we do about UK drill? And what do we do about Italian rappers? Because you seem to enjoy both of those,
I do
those
like
categories.
I like Italian trap, but they're not battling.
Okay, so it's the actual live performance that you're issuing.
I like Italian trap.
Okay.
But it's also very questionable. Don't get it wrong. I look at it with a questionable eye. Dude.
Okay, you want an eyebrow raised?
Yeah. Now, because the Italian trap, right, there's this kid named like Shive or something like that. I can't remember his name.
Okay.
But he's like the, he's on his real trap rapper shit, like... They're riding through the slums of, you know, some southern Italian city.
Right.
And he's got a knot full of money. He's got a knot full of, I think he had American dollars, actually.
Oh, sure.
And they're drinking syrup. And he's got, like, a red sports car.
Is he on an ATV?
He had a pit bull. No, they don't do ATVs. They do ATVs. Mopeds out there.
Oh,
they
right.
roll up
the
on
Vespas.
A moped. Yeah, yeah. They rolled up shirts off, tatted from head to toe, gold shining on a Vespa.
Right.
The old school style Vespa.
It worked for Big Pun. Why can't it work for them?
Yeah. Yeah, the Italian trap, that's still up in the air about that. I'm just removing their privileges for any battles of any sort.
Gotcha.
And UK drill, that can kick rocks as far as I'm concerned.
All
There's
right.
no real, no UK drill has caught me and
to
and
really lock you in.
Yeah, okay. I haven't gotten any entertainment out of it.
All right,
so.
I gotcha.
You know, if I ever go to London, now they're going to stab me. But I got a new knife this weekend, so it'll
good.
Be okay. This is a nice knife, dude. Every
you got
day.
Your switchblade EDC. Fresh off of the West Side Story soundstage.
It's small. My wife said, is it bigger than your palm? I don't know if that's a real law or not, right? They say that if your knife is smaller than your four fingers together like this.
Then you have cancer.
Then it's... oh. Yeah. You ever smell your knuckles? Bite your elbow. Then it's legal if it's smaller than four fingers across.
That seems like a weird.
Seems like an old wives' tale.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
But how can a knife not like why could how could this be this can't be illegal, I feel like. Right? Like I feel like you can't make a knife illegal because all it is a piece of metal that happens to be sharpened. So any sharpened piece of metal now is illegal. So you're telling me if I take the blade off of my lawnmower and go walk into the store to get them to sharpen my lawnmower blade, now that's illegal because it's a sharpened piece of metal that's bigger than my four fingers? You know what I mean? So I don't know that that's a true law or if it's just, you know, like one of these things that, you know, you say to other fourth graders when you're a kid.
I'm certainly not a lawyer.
You know what we should do? We should call our resident law enforcement official.
The Jedi?
Yep. Let's see what he says about it. Let me see if I can find the plug.
Let's see if the whole thing will work.
Where is the plug? Oh, it's over here somewhere. Here. Is it this? This one?
Yeah, that looks right. So it's got the iPod end on it, iPad end on it. Oh, yep. That was definitely it.
All right. Let's see if we can get him on the phone. This is exciting radio, folks.
Tune in as we dial.
Yeah. He should be. He should answer. He's an investor now, so he doesn't wake up early in the morning.
Don't investors have to wake up early in the morning?
I don't know.
To see the markets?
No, no. He's a real estate investor.
Oh, oh, oh.
He got his first investment property.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Or he's already sleeping so that he could wake up and go to the workout early.
Push it to voicemail.
Have I been to axe throwing? I've never been to axe throwing. I'm not against it, but...
David Paul.
Oh. Whoever that was. It sounds like you missed dialed, I guess.
I don't know. So, listen. So,
Well, the law said... The thing I'm reading
what
here
do you got?
Says... New Jersey law prohibits the possession without any explainable lawful purpose of any gravity knife, switchblade knife, dagger, dirk, stiletto, dangerous knife, or ballistic knife. Possession of a weapon in one's home is arguably a lawful purpose. Pocket knives may be carried outside of the home, except by one having unlawful intent or who possesses the knife for some unlawful purpose. Self-defense beyond the limits of one's home is not a lawful purpose.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, what a wild thing to say.
So the
you can't defend yourself once you step off your driveway.
With a knife. But also, it does specify critical dimensions is the blade has to be 5 inches or more. So that palm thing is not terribly off.
5 inches or more or five inches or less?
More. Once it's more, then it falls into this illegal category. If you're carrying 5 inches or less, it doesn't seem to fall into this.
Right. I don't have a tape measure close by, but that seems about... 5 inches across your palm.
So, you know, don't go carrying that machete. We might have to rethink that whole thing.
We got the call coming back shortly.
Oh, good.
We'll see what he has to say about it. He usually when I have a law question and I ask him,
right,
he then goes full bore into finding the answer.
The definition,
for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got that's what you have your resources for.
I got a lot of resources.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean it seems crazy, and we can talk more when we get the Jedi on the phone of what I think of that. So 4 a.m. is my wake-up time.
Right, which, speaking of things that sound crazy. Yeah. Although I used to do it all the time, but I even thought it was crazy then, so.
Well, I just like, one, I the only place that I can guarantee that I'm going to fit in a workout
right.
is at that time. And I'm not good at when I'm not working out.
Right.
I get about 1.5 days without a workout before my life starts to...
unravels.
Yeah. It's like Prozac, dude. You know what I mean? The fitness is the TWD Prozac.
Okay. I like that.
So if you're having a tough time, go do some push-ups or something.
Right.
Or hit us up. We'd be glad to talk you through it.
100%.
Put it in the comments. You know what I mean? We'll get back to you. Maybe if you're having such a tough time that you need us to talk to you, you put it in the comments. We'll get back to you with the number to call, and we'll talk it all out on the show with you.
If it's in the comments now, we'll talk about it right now.
That's also
true.
We're
not going to – we'll switch lanes to make sure that
you're
okay.
For all the two guys who are here?
All the both of them.
Yeah. Why am I saying that? 4 a.m.
4 a.m.
So at 4 a.m., it's the witching hour, dude.
That's what they say.
In this neighborhood, 4 a.m. is the witching hour. So I'm getting ready to go to the gym. I got my – sweatsuit on. I go sweatsuit out with my workout. I'm going really short shorts this summer.
Oh, okay.
Because my legs are getting shredded.
Oh, there you go.
And there's no reason that I shouldn't be showing them off.
You're going. Is that us?
No. Okay. Not yet.
You're going straight Daisy Dukes?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I got my sweatsuit on over my short shorts.
Okay.
And I'm heading to the gym. I open the door, the side door to my house, which is the one that I go out. I feel like I was too far off the mic. And I open the door, and right there, walking across the steps in front of me, is a skunk. The biggest, ugliest skunk that you ever saw.
Right.
Probably the oldest skunk, too. This guy looked like he had some age on him, because his white puff, like his whole back was a white strip.
His face looked world weary.
He's been growing his white stripe for years upon years. And I don't know what the life expectancy is of a New Jersey skunk, but I'd assume that this guy's pushing 2 decades.
He's the one curving up.
Yeah.
He's making the average curve up.
Exactly. He turns, as soon as I open the door, he turns and looks me dead in the face, dude. I lock eyes with this guy.
Thinking through, bro.
Right? I'm like, oh, shit. And I'm trying not to move.
Right.
I'm like, if I don't move, maybe he doesn't see me.
He won't dust you.
He looks, And I promise you, this is not even a little bit of a lie.
Right.
I lock eyes with this skunk. He one-ups me, once-overs me, bro. Looks me up and down.
Chin up, down.
And then back at my face. And I could see what was running through his head. He's looking at himself and he's thinking like, I'm a filthy animal, right? And I've got weaponry that proves I'm a filthy animal.
Right.
But do I really want to do battle with the freshest kid out here?
Yeah.
Do I have the ability to defreshify the freshest kid out here?
It's not so much does he, but does he want to? Because he definitely does.
No. I think that my aura of freshness kind of works as a force field against skunk spray.
It will repel the skunk dust?
Exactly.
All right.
Because he once overs me, I promise you, he looked me up and down, locked eyes with me again, and then moseyed away like, nah, not today. I don't want to go up against this.
Maybe he just saw that you were thorough, and he was like, all right, you're good with me, I'm good with you, let's move on. Let's go our separate ways.
I think he respected the freshness. Because even at 4 in the morning, I got on a crisp polo sweatsuit and a little bit of Cologne.
You're not leaving the house without looking sharp, just in case. What if you wind up in the
hospital? In case you run across a skunk and his whole demeanor is like, should I dirty this guy up or let him live? And he moseys off and then ducks under the fence and he's out of there. He thought better of it that day. And then like a couple mornings later, 4 a.m., I caught him further down the driveway.
Okay.
This guy's in my yard at 4 a.m. every
You think he's trying
Every
to steal
morning.
Your tools out the truck?
I think he knows I got a bike. He's probably trying to get the bike.
Okay.
But I put a whole new lock system and a camera on it, so...
It ain't going nowhere.
It's not going nowhere, right, dude. You know what I mean? I put a trip alarm on the inside of the door, so...
Of the bike?
Of the shed.
Oh, the bike's in the shed. Okay.
Yeah. So my phone beeps at me should that door open,
breached.
Like, you know, between the hours of... 9 and whatever.
Winds up like Call of Duty and you're just jumping out the window ready to go.
It's over.
Yeah.
My new pocket knife.
Right.
That's
legal. Under 5 inches. Yeah. Well, no, you're on your property, so it can be whatever you want it to be.
Solid. I want to get into the 37th year of life. I just don't want the Jedi to call and then get sidetracked on that.
Okay.
I feel like I'm really trying to dig here.
To kill time until Jedi calls?
I don't know.
Well,
anyway, let's talk rap.
All right, good.
I was listening to the first Fab album over the weekend.
Okay.
And I thought, I was in the gym listening to it. First off.
Let me see. Make sure I know which one is the first one.
I think it's just called Fabulous. It's got Can't Deny It on it.
Okay.
And Youngin. Holla back, Youngin. Boop, boop. That.
So it's not Street Dreams?
No, it's before Street Dreams.
Okay.
Street Dreams was the next one.
Okay.
And Street Dreams is solid, although they had Street Dreams 2 or Street Dreams 1.5 or something like that.
Right.
That was like the street, but that was actual. This is perfect. It's perfect because that's just more fodder for my point.
Good.
Fab before his first album was a mixtape circuit monster.
Absolutely.
All over the Clue tapes. And that's where we first heard them.
Yeah.
We first got freestyles from Fab, right? Over the Rocky beat and over It's Yours and all types of freestyles. The Clue tapes. Then he drops Can't Deny It was his first single. And then he had maybe something for some girl single, right? But Fab is the last. He's kind of the last. His first album marks the end of an era.
Okay.
Right? And I don't know that there's another MC who took his underground success and who was so well respected in the underground and then also wound up being so well respected by the mainstream.
Carried it over.
Yeah. One way or the other, right? Hmm. If you start on the underground and you get pop, you tend to stay pop.
Right.
You know?
Right. You fully cross over.
One or the other lacks when you have success in one of those fields. Now, like I was just saying with Street Dreams was it was an album, but it made its rounds like a mixtape. Right?
Okay.
So Fab was able to still, after that first album that had plenty of commercial success, he was able to come back with Street Dreams and like drop himself back into the underground to like keep that respect of the underground going that he had. And even later in his career, he had like the Funeral mixtapes, which were underground joints.
Right.
And then he had huge above board, you know, like pop hits, which I can't think of right now, but there's no doubt that Fab has had like major Q102 style, you know, pop radio hits.
The big one that comes to mind is Into You. Was a monster hit everywhere.
Yeah. Wasn't Jagged Edge or something on it?
No, the Jagged Edge one's on the first album. Into You's on Street Dreams with there's a girl singing on it. Ashanti.
Yep.
Ashanti.
Yeah. And then he came back and did like the Freddie and Jason mixtape with Jada. So it's like Fab is the last of the MCs who I think could really
float
back and forth effortlessly and still well-going pop, still garner and hold on to the respect of the underground crowd. There hasn't really been a guy. 50 went pop and stayed pop.
Okay.
Power of a Dollar was an underground classic.
Right.
I still listen to Power of a Dollar on a monthly basis. I go back and listen to it because it's such a great album.
You think Get Rich or Die Trying is pop?
No, but it's on its way to pop.
Okay, because In the Club and Wangster and things like that? Okay.
Because then afterwards, he and 21 Questions.
Right. Is that on that one or is that on Massacre?
It might be on the next one, but that's what I'm saying. Get Rich or Die Trying was on his way to pop.
Okay.
Get Rich or Die Trying still had the streets. We were still listening to it while I was locked up.
Yeah.
It was one. We had Get Rich or Die Trying and we had Diplomats Volume 5.
Okay.
Diplomats were huge on the underground.
Yeah.
And maybe dipped their toes in commercial success, but really only dipped their toes. Like
Cam had a couple. Cam had Oh Boy and...
Yeah, but they really stayed more for the streets.
For sure. Even Oh Boy is that... And what's the other one with the Commodore's...
Hey Ma?
Hey Ma.
Right.
They're supposed to be pop, but the lyrics don't play out that way.
Maybe there's one more guy that I could think of that kind of did what Fab did, but I also don't think he did it in the same fashion that Fab did it, and that's Lil Wayne.
Okay.
Because Lil Wayne had early pop kind of success.
Okay.
You know, like when he was with Cash Money, they had a little bit of mainstream success.
Right.
And then he kind of ducked back down into mixtape Wayne on the underground when he either started rapping for himself or started buying verses off of Gilly, whichever one it was. Yeah. He was back in the underground lane where we were buying mixtapes, and he had all them DJ, you know, Cannon mixtapes and the Gangsta Grills and all that.
Right.
And then he, from the mixtapes, went back to a little more mainstream success. And he's kind of able to float both ways. But I really, as I was listening to the Fab joint this weekend, it kind of, that's what I felt about it, is that like, yo, he may be the last that really kind of played both worlds.
I'm trying to think of anybody after him, and this is where, like, because Fab's like 2002 and forward, that's where my sort of my knowledge, it doesn't necessarily shrink, but like the timelines all kind of bleed
right.
a lot more.
Right.
Because like the ones that come to mind, first of all, obviously it's before, but we're describing basically what Jay-Z was able to do for his whole career.
Yeah.
He was able to be pop, but also he could put out dirt and people would eat it up too. Ludacris, maybe, but I don't know where he overlays with Fabulous.
I don't really feel like Luda, I feel like, kind of came out the gate commercial.
Okay.
You know, because like he wasn't really, and I respect Ludacris's, you know, skill set.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was really ever an underground MC, like, for the streets.
Okay.
You know, like, he was a radio DJ, and he was, from my understanding, he was doing, like, drops on the radio, and then wound up parlaying that into a whole rap career. Chris Lova Lova.
Right.
The radio DJ.
No, I think you make a good point. My only, you know, if we're going to explore this topic, my question is going to be, is this the fault of the lack of talent, or is this this is where you really truly start to see the change in the way that we consume music overall. Like, not that he had to do it, but Fabulous did that because all those lanes were available to him at once.
Right.
And he was able to take advantage of it because he's talented. Those lanes don't exist like that anymore. Like, part of it is, you know, the radio pounding a song down your throat. There's no radio anymore. It right. exists, but I don't know. Anybody under 40 probably never even turns it on, and everybody over 40 just turns it on for talk radio. Mm-hmm. There is no one guiding fact. You know, at some point in time in the early 2000s, Clear Channel and one other brand owned every station in Philly. So if Clear Channel decided something was supposed to be a hit, it's you heard it every 45 right. minutes, and
they're
that's
gonna
that.
Make it a hit.
Yeah. You don't have that anymore. You have Spotify, and Spotify is fine-tuned to play you what you want to hear.
Right.
So if I'm thumbs-upping stuff, not that I don't like Fabulous's pop stuff, but I'm not going to thumbs-up it. So it's not going to feed me that side of the deal. You know what I mean?
Hello, you're on the air with The Manual.
Yo.
What up?
Catch me off guard here.
Well, listen, we have a... We had a big law question, and I said, let me talk to my my law. What's the word when you like...
Consigliere?
No, there's another con word. It's a con... It's a, like a...
Consultant?
My law consultant.
All right.
The Jedi. Right. So I got a new pocket knife for my birthday, right?
Yeah.
And the discussion came up that a... knife is legal to carry as long as it's the blade is not bigger than the width of your hand across.
No, there's no rules for blade size. One time I pulled a knife out from next to some dude's car seat, and it was like a machete just about, and there wasn't really much I could do.
Okay. Oh,
so he's going the other way with it. He's saying flat out you can just carry it.
Yeah, there's no,
as long as you're not brandishing it.
As long as you're not using it for unlawful purposes.
So does it have to be sheathed?
Yeah.
So does that mean that you can carry around a samurai sword on your waist?
Yeah, but you can't. But what are the spring-loaded ones?
Like a switchblade?
Yeah, right. they are prohibited weapons.
Yeah, and a butterfly knife is also prohibited.
Butterfly knife is... also, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, at least that was the chat in all the middle schools that I remember, that butterfly knives were illegal. So ideally, I'm going to put a machete in a sheath on the side of my dirt bike, and I should be fully okay to be doing that.
As long as you're not using it for an unlawful purpose.
Nah, it's strictly for survival purposes.
Yeah, then you're good.
All right. How did you make out with the... with the house and the inspection?
The inspection went well.
All right.
So we're just waiting to close at the end of the month.
Phenomenal. All right. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate your consulting, and I'm sure I will talk to you soon.
Anytime.
Later, brother. There it is, dude.
Well, that worked pretty well.
There
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Let's get our knives.
Carry a knife as big as you want, and tell them the Jedi told you it was okay.
That's right. I talked to my friends who were in law enforcement. They said, this is cool as long as I'm not trying to stab you with it.
The Jedi said it's cool.
Right.
Then they're probably going to lock you up in 305. You send you to an institution somewhere. All right. Which brings me to my last point of the evening.
It's about time.
We have made mention. This is the Dirt White Rel's birthday episode.
Right. I feel... foolish. I didn't even bring you your tiramisu like I normally do. But to be honest, I'm glad that we started late tonight because I got about 15 minutes out before I remembered I had to go back and get something else and bring it with me when right. I came here tonight.
It wouldn't have been a big deal. If it was at your house, I would have went and got it.
Yeah.
You know? So I have some Termini Brothers Pizzellas for you.
Oh, okay.
Because...
too much anise for you?
You know me, dude. Yeah. Yeah, solid full moon tonight, Deuces Coco. I saw it. It's pulling me towards it. It's making me crazy.
It's wild.
So I'm 37, dude.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. God knows. Who would have thought? I wasn't supposed to be 18. And there was a point when they said he's not going to make it to 18.
Right.
And it's hard to... Why does my mic... Is this my ears or is it my mic, dude? What's
going on? What do you think is
on?
Happening with your mic?
It sounds like I'm not talking directly into the mic.
Well, you keep talking over the mic, so that's not the mic.
No, but
that's
I usually talk like this, and it picks it up fine. Maybe I'm just maybe at 37, my hearing's
starting,
just
yeah,
getting better.
You got to go worse. You got to go get checked out over at
Costco. I also think I need a finger in my rear.
I am.
So that could be by the doctor or anybody who's out there watching.
Well, you got that attachment for the GoPro, so you can
Fair
just
enough.
Do it yourself.
Yep. yeah. Well, I thought of some of that, right? Some of, like, you know, my birthday, I tend to, like, do a little reflection, maybe
sure.
more than the regular day. And I did reflect upon the idea that, like, fiscally or I have lots of worldly items now that I never thought that I would acquire.
Okay.
You know, I have a bank account.
Right.
I have a nice truck that I like. I got a dirt bike. I have a home. I have two kids. I have... A whole set of any Milwaukee tool that I could ever need.
You got certain elements of responsibility that you didn't anticipate that you'd ever have a need to own, let alone actually own.
Right. I got a solid collection of polo pieces now.
Right.
You know?
Well, that was always in the cards.
Yeah, I mean, that was, if you asked me at 22 when I was wilding what I wanted, like, hey, what do you want out of life? I'd have said, I just want a closet full of polo, man.
Just all the polo.
Yeah.
All the current stuff.
I just want a closet full of low gear and the ability to go buy the new stuff when I want it.
Me and Thurston Howell III, we got the same.
That's it, dude.
We got the same vision.
I respect, there's not a better polo collection on earth, if you ask me, than Thurston Howell.
Listen, if you're going to be the head of the low club, you got to.
You got to do it right.
Yeah,
for sure. So, I was thinking of those things, right?
Okay.
Like, I never expected to be here where I am.
Right.
I would have been happier, I think, with much less. But also, I don't spend enough time just being happy.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
Which is a double-edged sword.
Right.
Because if I do, I could just be happy with where I'm at. And I feel like because of my mental wiring,
okay,
just being happy where I'm at could get me to the point where I'm satisfied and very, like,
afraid you'll stagnate?
Lackadaisical about things,
okay.
Right? Like, what? There's been times when I had nothing and was like, hey, I'm just happy to be here. You know?
Right.
And then I didn't get anything because I was just happy to be there. I was just happy to live in a recovery house instead of a jail.
Right.
And I was just happy to have two pairs of sneakers instead of a pair of state slip-ons. I was just happy to have a desktop full of cosmetics that were name brand instead of Bob Barker. And that's what I got. And that's what I had. And I stayed with that for a while until I went backwards because I was lackadaisical and happy with where I was instead of being progressive and looking for the next thing and the next success.
So you feel like you almost have to ignore some of your happiness in order to drive you further down the road.
I don't know that I do or I don't, but that's what I do.
You think, well, I mean, like if you took a step back and just said, let me take a minute to appreciate everything I've accomplished and built in this life.
Yeah.
Then you would suddenly be too happy about it and not want to accomplish more?
No, I take that step back and on occasion.
You do.
I'm not
okay.
I'm not unaware of where I am.
Okay.
And you know the fact that getting here is wasn't supposed to happen.
Right.
But I don't think that I think I've had times where, like, throughout the entire day, I walked around for a whole day with the idea of, like, contentness and being happy. And I think that because things have gotten so hectic with these responsibilities that are now placed in my life, there's a lot more thought on responsibility than thought on my own, you know, mental happiness. And that, I think
okay.
that's fine because it's the, it's the essence of what we are here for is to, like,
right.
you know, like, religious people will tell you you're here to serve God.
Right.
But I do think that we're here to serve others, like to be a part of someone else's life. I had this conversation with my daughter who was being a little bit funky to her friend.
Oh,
she's being a little spicy over the phone with her friend.
Okay.
And I was like, yo, Steph called her in the other room. I was like, don't talk to people like that. And then she kind of hit up. She was like, no, we were just pretending. I'm like,
Yeah.
So later when
she know you were pretending?
Yeah, she was off the phone sitting by herself in her playroom. And I said, like, look, baby, I have friends that I've had for almost 30 years. Right. Me and Smoke go back almost 30 years. Me and the Jedi go back almost 30 years. Me and Cousin E go back almost 30 years. happy birthday, by the way. I don't know what day it is. Thank you, Jedi, if you're the other guy who's watching here. I have friends that we've gone back for 3 decades.
Right.
And we never talk to each other like that. Not because maybe we're always happy with what the other person is doing, but because the friendship is built upon, like, let me lift you or push you or just make you laugh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the idea is just that we're friends and this is a positive interaction. We're here. What's up?
I just had this conversation with my wife because if you didn't know my friends and I,
mm-hmm.
it would just sound like a whole bunch of abusive conversations.
Right. Yeah, but it's not. But that's not what it is.
No, none of us have any intent but love for each other. But just listening to it from the other room, if you didn't know us, these people have to hate each other. There's no other way.
Right. But when something comes down to it,
oh no, we'll kill for each other.
Yeah, they call you up and they say, "P, I need you to show up here and do this," and you go, "All right, man, I got you." Whether you want to or not, you go, "All right, I got you.
I need to go do something." And then, you can't ask me about it now. Right. You can't ask me about it later.
It's Nas and Noriega. I got a body in the trunk. Yeah. So what's it going to be?
I got the shovel.
So I'm telling her this, and I say, like, me and Uncle Smoke have had a great relationship without really any fights or anything for this 30 years because we just accept each other for what we are, right? And I'm trying to make it important to her to be polite and positive with your friends.
Yeah.
I say, when we got this house because of Uncle Smoke, and her, like, she looked like, what do you mean? I'm like, we had to put a lot of money down that at the time you were a baby. My business was just starting. Mommy was not really working like that. And Uncle Smoke said, sure, here's the money that you need for the down payment on this house. And then we paid him back over the next couple months. And that's because we've had this conversation where it's love and positivity and respect.
Yeah.
So you need to, like, honor your friendships, right? Like, that's right. I think that's what, honor your relationships. You need to place, like, you know, put your relationships on a pedestal with your friends because that's what they're there for. And if your friends are not going to also put your relationship on a pedestal and your friendship on a pedestal,
it's not really a friend.
Then they're not really there for the same thing as you.
No.
So that was a conversation I had with her. So I don't know why I went off into that.
You
got to
raise these kids right. Well, because you're 37 now and you got to leave. You got to make sure that by the time you die in a couple years that Sadie is prepared to carry on your legacy by being proper to society.
Yeah, right. We're here to... And right. Religions will tell you we are here to serve God.
Right.
But I think we are here to serve society.
And each other.
Which also... That may be serving God at the same time.
Sure.
You know,
they can
depends
cross over.
On how you look
you
at it.
You don't have
right?
to be anti one to be the other.
And we know here at the TWD manual, if there's one thing that I, the OG TWD, has credited for saving my life more than any other, it is the teachings of the 5 percenters.
Right.
So I look at things in supreme math without not purposely doing it. It happens, right? Like I occasionally see the world in supreme math.
Yeah.
37 is understand God or understanding God, right? Okay.
You gonna start going to church with the kid?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. That would be a in my eyes, that's a misunderstanding of what I understand God to already be.
Which is you.
Right. But at 37, right? So understanding God, at 37, you're at a spot, I'm at a spot, and I think most guys at 37 come to this spot in their life where, and maybe it happens a little earlier for some guys, maybe a little later, but you come to a spot where you're kind of like, oh, I kind of get it. And you know that you don't know it. You know, they say it's so cliche, but like in my 20s, I thought I knew it all, but I didn't know shit.
Right.
In my 30s, I knew I didn't know shit, you know, and maybe that's reality, but you come to a point in your 30s where you start to fully understand yourself and what you're about and what your life is about and what you're working for and how your brain functions and all of it. You have the cognitive ability to like logically and honestly look at your life and your cipher around you.
Yeah.
And see it for what it is. You have the ability to understand self, God.
Yeah. Especially if you have a kid. If you have a kid, because at this age, like, all the things that have brought you here kind of start to link together and unlock and make more sense than they ever did. So when 9/11 happened, I was driving around in the pretzel truck. I went home to see my dad, who worked from home. And I got there and he was crying. And like, I couldn't quite process why he was crying. I was in my 20s when that happened. Like, my dad was not particularly an emotional guy to begin with.
Right.
And like, that he was crying about it seemed, I could understand being afraid. I could understand concern, but he was crying. And it never, ever made sense to me at all until I had my son.
Right.
And I was like, he wasn't crying for him. Right. He wasn't crying out of his emotion. He was crying out of the feeling that he was helpless to protect me from this.
Right.
And like, understanding that was like eye-opening to a whole bunch of other stuff. But I don't think you get there if you don't have a child of your own that you're protecting. So that's part of the key to unlocking all of this at 37.
I agree. Because you start to understand with your own kid, you start to understand that like, rather than, as I was, running through life selfishly and just looking at every person for what they were. Like, I think I've always tried to understand you where you're at, right? Whoever you are.
Right.
And I've made further strides in that as I've gotten older. But I think for the most part, I've always accepted you where you're at. And whether I like it or I don't got any say in it. And right. I don't have any feelings invested in it either. And I was running around looking at people as individuals, and then you have a kid, and I think that whether consciously or subconsciously, you start to look at people and go, oh, you're somebody's baby.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you have a mom who loves you the way that I love her. Or you have some kids that if you're taken out of here or you're doing what you're doing, you're doing something crazy, you're out in the streets, and you got some kids, well, then you're a dick because I can relate in thought of like, how would that play out should I like go start running the streets again,
right,
and leave my kids and my wife here by themselves to not know where I'm at.
Right.
You know? So you get that understanding that like, people are not, they aren't necessarily just what they're portraying in front of you. There's something behind them, even if it's just a family tree. But that makes them more important than they were before you realized this kind of thing that having a kid unlocks.
Right.
So you start, the 37 and understanding God and understanding self and like maybe even understanding God on the level of like, if God is the guy in the sky, the karmic forces, Buddha, whatever God is, right? You start to, I think now I understand the exterior idea of spirituality more than I did 10 years ago.
Sure.
Because 10 years ago, it was all rigid 5%er, I'm God. And I couldn't even really tell you why that was. It just made sense to me. Now, as we've had the conversation a couple episodes back, we kind of broke it down with Krang in my head. I got Krang in here running things and, you know, there's the whole concept. But that came with just understanding myself and understanding life a little bit more. So it's my 37th year, and even the one thing that I also thought of, I was driving to work listening to Outlaw Country for Wiggers.
As you should.
One of my favorite playlists.
Sure.
and thought like about how everybody says to you like, oh man, this is your day. I hope you enjoy. I hope you have the best day. Enjoy this day, right? And I'm like, yo, how about you enjoy this day the same way that I'm going to? Like, that's beautiful. It's my birthday, but I want you to love this same day,
right,
the same way that I do. And I only love it because it's my birthday. But that small thought of this is my birthday opens up a gate inside of your brain to say like, well, no matter what happens today, it's all good. And we all have the ability to rock with that thought and open that gate every day, but we get caught up in things, right?
Yeah.
So when somebody's birthday comes up and you say, yo, enjoy this day because this is your birthday, like this is your day, like every day can be your day.
Every day can be your special day.
So the same way that you're saying it to that guy or to that girl, right? You take that, when you say that,
say it to you.
Yeah, take it and apply it, right? And just go, you know what? Every day could be my day. And it's not, you know, you're not going to feel like that every day. It's not something that you're going to be able to keep in touch with, but it's a concept that
should be placed in practice.
That falls
into that sort of fake it till you make it sort of idea where, like, even if you get up and you feel like, oh, it's going to be a rotten day. No, it's going to be a great day because I'm here and I'm up and let's go get them. And then maybe you find that what was supposed to be a lousy day at least becomes a midday. And then you made it better for yourself.
It's all about the perception,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
It's all about how you take it. Somebody once told me, take your problem and put it in your hand. And that way you could twist it around, look at it upside down, throw it in your left hand, look at it here, and you're able to see it from all angles and maybe attack it a different way.
That's a great idea.
Come back next Monday, and we'll attack a different topic. Maybe this is your week. No, not maybe. This is your week.
This is your week, starting your month.
There's not a thing stopping you from working towards whatever the thing is that you want to have happen.
No.
You want to write a book? Pick up a pen. You want to start a business? Get on rocketlawyer.com and make that LLC, Daddy.
That's right. Go down to Delaware and sign it tax-free.
You want a wife? Start brushing your teeth.
They got catalogs over in Russia. Do what you got to do.
Well, that too. But if you don't got the money, then brush your teeth.
Yeah.
Lower your standards,
right,
and go find a,
go find
a Northeast 3 that she'll love you maybe more than the South Philly 10 would.
She don't want to lose you. She don't got no other options.
You want to do a thing? Do a thing. Stop playing around. If you want to do a thing, do a thing.
For Christ's sake.
Because this is your day, and this is your week, and at the end of it, come back here, and let's talk about it.